Hello and welcome to the Autosport Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Kalanorkas. The opening practice running for the returning Portuguese Grand Prix took place today at the Algarve International Circuit, and the action from FP1 and FP2 at Portimão is the subject of our latest bite-sized podcast. Now, as I work on my usual Friday feature based on the action from today that you can read later on tonight on autosport.com+, I'm going to hand over to my colleagues, Autosport's technical editor Jake Boxall-Legg and Jonathan Noble, F1 editor at motorsport.com, who will guide you through all the big talking points of the day's F1 action in Portugal. Over to you, Jake and John.
Thank you, Alex. And yes, after 24 years away, Formula One finally got underway for a Grand Prix weekend in Portugal at the Algarve Circuit. And so far, the star of the Friday show has been Valtteri Bottas, who headed both FP1 and FP2, setting a 1:17.940 in the latter session for the fastest lap of the day. And I'm joined by Jonathan Noble, motorsport.com's F1 editor, to discuss the Friday fallout, of which there was plenty in Portugal. Now, John, unlike last time, we've got some Friday action to actually talk about. So first of all, what are your impressions of the Algarve circuit? It looks like a bit of a challenge for the drivers, doesn't it?
Yeah, I thought it looked great, actually. I remember doing a piece a few years ago with speaking to Herman Tilke about track designs, because he's had a fairly big battering over the years for some of his tracks, some of which aren't great, some of which are all right. And he said to me, one of the greatest assets a racetrack can have, and you think of the tracks we like, Suzuka, Spa, even Austin to some extent, is elevation. I think it's really, really underrated aspect of a racetrack. You know, Sochi, flat as a pancake, really boring. Spa, Suzuka, fantastic. And I think we've got to put Portimão up there as well. And the shots of the last corner, as they swoop downs like a, as great as anything we see at Suzuka. And I also like that shot where they, from the start finish rate, they pop up over the horizon onto start finish rate, then dive down again. So yeah, I've really, really liked the spectacle today.
Excellent. Yeah, that does look really, really good. I think, to be honest with you, my bar is lowered so far to not Paul Ricard, and this is not Paul Ricard, so it gets my stamp of approval. But yes, Bottas was fastest in both sessions today, and Hamilton was only down in eighth in FP2, but that was perhaps helped by him encountering traffic on his fast run. But John, is this Bottas looking good like he did at the Nürburgring when he eventually got pole, or is it just him sort of again adapting to that not yet rubber in circuit, if you like?
I think it's a bit of a messy day all told, really. I think it's quite hard to gauge really where people are at. FP2 wasn't really representative of anything. That the first half hour taken up by these new tyre tests, then they got a little bit of running done, then the red flag for Gasly, then a little bit more running down, then the red flag for Verstappen, Stroll. So it wasn't really enough time for people to get into the rhythm. And I think Valtteri often has this trait of hitting the ground running, and then Lewis seems to play catch up, but you know, hits his stride when it matters, which is qualifying. So I think it's promising that Valtteri is there and isn't coming from behind. But I think we'll know much more tomorrow, and more representative. And you know, Lewis just has his knack of a bad Friday turns into a brilliant Saturday.
Certainly. And I think practice is definitely there to sort of make your mistakes early, so you know what not to do in the big sessions. But yeah, that certainly seems to be the case. And as you said, FP2 was very interrupted. Two red flags, one for Pierre Gasly's rather spectacular blowout, which required quite a lot of work from the marshals' fire extinguishers. Fernando Alonso did once say that the Honda engine was a little bit like a GP2 engine, and as we've watched in F2 over the last couple of years, there's been a few similar fires, or Bruno barbecues, as I like to call them. The other one was a clash between Max Verstappen and Lance Stroll down at turn one. Now, John, can you talk us through that? Because it was a bit of a messy one again, wasn't it?
Yeah, messy and unnecessary. It's very, very rare that drivers collide in practice sessions like this. And I think what was remarkable about it was the live cameras at the time. You were on board with Max and you could just sense this wasn't going to go very well. You saw Lance had gone by and then expected Max to back off and leave a bit of a gap as they started the lap. And he didn't do that. He tucked right under Lance's slipstream, opened DRS, pulled alongside him. And then I think you saw what we see as an aspect of the Honda is it runs out of energy at the end of the long straight. So as the Honda ran out of energy, the Merc was still going. So Lance then suddenly pulled a little bit in front. So it was, you know, a touch of Max's left front wheel against Lance's right rear wheel as they went into the zone. You thought, right, one of them's going to do the sensible thing here and back out. But I think, unfortunately, neither did. So I think Lance turned in not realizing that Max was there. Max turned in expecting Lance have got out of the way. And in the end, I mean, it could have been a massive accident because it's a pretty quick corner, 170, 180 miles an hour. I mean, Lance could have been tipped over, could have been much, much worse than it actually was. But yeah, very silly incident. Yeah, Max's colourful language on the radio afterwards wasn't too hot either.
No, that's probably, it was a bit iffy to say the least, but Stroll has definitely had a little bit of a time of it in the last few races. Obviously went out in Mugello, knocked out in the first lap at Sochi, obviously missed last weekend as well due to illness. This is not going to be something that he's wanted, is it?
No, I mean, it's been an amazing season for Racing Point, really, because I can't think of a race where they've just rocked up on the Thursday, had no controversy on Friday, Saturday or Sunday or incidents or any big talking point and left without something hanging over the team. So poor Will Hings, their PR officer, I think, you know, he'll be desperate for a weekend of not having to firefight something. It's been incredible. But yeah, Stroll, you know, under fire from all quarters about the, you know, the controversy over his coronavirus test and leaving Germany and then only testing on his return home, then keeping the result quiet. Racing Point have been on the receiving end of it too, received a reminder from the FIA about their need to be transparent and inform them. So another difficult weekend and on the back foot. And I mean, and right now we're waiting for the stewards' verdict. So the stewards are meeting to discuss what to do. And I'd be very surprised if there wasn't some form of sanction for it, because the FIA don't look very nicely towards needless accidents in practice sessions.
No, exactly. I'm keeping an eye on my email inbox as it happens, just to see if it comes in while we record this. It hasn't come in so far. We'll probably be waiting.
Has it? You want something live?
Oh.
No further action, basically.
That's...
Stroll was on a fast lap and was allowed to pass by Verstappen on the lap preceding the incident. Given the information from his team and usual practice, Verstappen assumed that Stroll would back off for the next lap and move to overtake along the main straight. However, Stroll was instructed by his team to go for a second flying lap. Stroll assumed that Verstappen would have backed off to gain a gap between them, also in line with usual practice, and so was not looking for the overtaking of Verstappen. The drivers agreed in the hearing the incident was the result of a misunderstanding between them, and that with hindsight, both could have contributed to avoid the incident. The stewards therefore find that neither driver was wholly or predominantly at fault and take no further action. So, there we go.
Live on air. I don't know what time this will go out, but it was live when we recorded it. So, basically kind of 50-50 then, pretty much. Both drivers could have avoided it. Do you think that's the right call, John?
No, well, I'd surprised him at least get a reprimand or something for behaviour. It's not particularly acceptable that, you know, no further action is taken when cars are colliding at such a speed. And also, you know, this was a high speed corner, and both drivers should have been aware of where the other drivers were as well. So I am a little bit surprised, but I think in the end it was right that neither driver was singled out for punishment, because it was six of one and a half a dozen of the other. But yeah, surprised there's been no form of even a slap over the wrists.
There we are. No further action on the Stroll and Verstappen case. But Stroll, of course, will eventually, we assume, be in that midfield battle with Racing Point. McLaren and, well, Sergio Perez and Carlos Sainz, McLaren and Racing Point, both looked relatively good in the earlier practice session. Charles Leclerc's looked up there as well. And Daniel Ricciardo's been fast at various points in FP1 and FP2. So this is set up to be another, you know, very, very heated midfield battle, isn't it?
Well, it's been heated midfield battle all season, actually, and it's quite hard to... I think today's especially scrappy, as we said earlier. I think we didn't really see full potential. We saw Daniel Ricciardo on a quick lap got bulked by one of the Williamses as he came out of the pits. Quite tricky down there at turn one. And disrupted FP2 especially, but we haven't seen the proper pace of the car. And I think the track's not very well rubbered in. A few drivers have called it like an ice rink, complaining about lack of grip. So I think there's a lot of lot of potential to come yet, a lot of grip to come from the circuit. And the other aspect is the wind direction, because we know, for example, the McLaren's very sensitive to wind, and especially gets especially hurt if there's a tailwind, which there was into turn one today. So, you know, the whole midfield battle could swing basically by which direction the wind blows tomorrow and Sunday.
A literal representation of that phrase. So we look forward to seeing that. It's always great to see the midfield action in play, and those, well, four teams contesting the battle for what is third place in the championship. It's been heated all season, as John said, so we look forward to seeing that. But further down the grid and off track, there was the team principals press conference today, and there's been various rumours about George Russell's future at Williams. Sergio Perez has been linked to the team, and Simon Roberts just happened to be in the team principal's press conference. But he didn't want to design a rumours, John. His response of nothing's changed was very similar to what Otmar Szafnauer was saying when Sebastian Vettel was being linked to Racing Point earlier in the season. What do you think of this, John? Is it going to get a little bit messy?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's no smoke without fire when rumours turn around. Some can get shot down. The ones that are incorrect will, you know, often get shot down very, very quickly and quite easily put to bed. And Williams today, their tactic was to basically didn't want to talk about it, which is fair enough. You know, teams don't have to talk about stories they don't particularly want to talk about. But if you want to put some rumour to bed and want to say there's nothing in it, then the easiest way to do it is to confirm that it's not true by saying that we are going to keep both our drivers for next year. So when you fall short of doing that and you've been offered plenty of opportunity, then it's obvious that something is up. And I guess it just boils down to a simple money decision, that if the team feels that the income, it needs more income next year. Because remember, we've still got although we're having a full 17 race season this year, the income isn't going to be as high as it is during a normal campaign. F1's lost the race hosting fees for the majority of the campaign. Teams' budgets are going to get hit by tens of millions of dollars as a result heading into next year. So teams are going to need to find a way to recoup some of that. And if you're in Williams' situation, especially with new owners who've come in and spent a lot of money on a team, and you've got a driver like Perez knocking on the door with good sponsorship backing, decent experience, ready to commit for 2, 3, or 4 years, against a driver like George Russell, who's there will be a contribution as part of the Mercedes engine deals. He's part of the Mercedes Young Driver Program. But, you know, the potential is that by the end of next year, George could get moved up to Mercedes. You've lost your investment in George anyway. Then maybe Williams are looking longer term. So however cruel it is, if George Russell does lose his seat, you can also understand it from Williams' perspective, why there is an attraction if Sergio Perez is knocking on the door.
Certainly. Money talks in Formula One, as it always has done. Obviously, Nicholas Latifi isn't, we expect, cited for the chop, because he brings quite a lot of money from Canada. So his seat looks relatively secure for now. But John, looking at the top once again, heading into qualifying tomorrow, who would you say is your pick for pole? Basically, it's usually a straight fight between two drivers on the grid. But do you think anyone else has a chance?
No, not here. I think the Mercs hit the ground running, even today without running DAS, for example, which you would expect them to slightly upset the car or need a little bit of work to recover to get the balance sorted or changes from that. It's made no difference, just as quick. In fact, look quicker relative to Red Bull than they were at Nürburgring. So I think it's a straight fight between Valtteri and Lewis, and then you can toss a coin. Let's go for Valtteri, because I think he's quite fired up. He's got nothing to lose. He's hit the ground running today. And I think just maybe that edge is enough to keep him there tomorrow.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, John. And stick with us through all the weekend for all of the news and reaction from the Portuguese Grand Prix, which will be with you on Sunday. Thanks for listening and thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks to John and JBL for their thoughts, and thanks to everybody listening. Now, just before we go, we'd like to remind you that the latest issue of Autosport magazine came out yesterday and is available on the supermarket shelves and in newsagents, as well as on the doormats of subscribers. There will be a new issue of the magazine for you to pick up every Thursday, packed full of news, analysis, and the usual stunning photography. And of course, if you want unlimited access to Autosport from the comfort of your home, visit autosport.com/plus to find out how to subscribe to our digital package. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Autosport Podcast.